Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington.
The current drought in the Horn of Africa is really severe. We have 4 consecutive seasons that have failed.
Drought-stricken parts of the Greater Horn of Africa brace for a 5th consecutive failed rain season, which will worsen the crisis which is impacting millions of people.
Currently, there are 122 arrests, and they will be prosecuted. About 11 vessels, 30 speedboats have been arrested, 179 wooden boats, and then 37 trucks.
A Nigerian official says 200,000 barrels of crude oil are stolen per day.
On the financial resources, it requires also human resources. And to those of all those particular skills who are interested to be part of this revolution and game changer in society, to come forward to say, I raise my hand.
And an online video dictionary for the deaf and hearing people who want to learn sign language has been launched in South Africa. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Authorities in Somalia's central region of Hiran say Al-Shabaab Islamist militants carried out deadly attacks against civilians in the region, killing at least 22 people. Mohamed Daisani reports from Mogadishu.
The Islamist militant group early Saturday attacked a convoy carrying food in Hiran region, an attack that claimed the lives of civilians, according to Hirshabelle state officials, who spoke with VOA by phone after the attack. The attack took place on the road between the region's capital, Beledweyne, and Mahas district. Officials say the group attacked a humanitarian convoy, killing 17 people, and then targeted civilian rescuers with landmine that killed 5 others. In a statement, the Somali government strongly condemned the attack and described it as barbaric and heinous. The government said it stands with the local community and promised to respond strongly to the brutal attack. Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the deadly attack and said it had killed 20 local militia in the attack. Abdurrahman Sheikh Azhari, director of the Mogadishu-based Center for Analysis and Strategic Studies, tells VOA that Al-Shabaab is conducting attacks in revenge. He says the attacks and activities by Al-Shabaab in the central region are a retaliation against locals who work with the government and regional security forces against Al-Shabaab in Hiran and Galmudug. He says it is a collective punishment against the local communities used by Al-Shabaab to stop them from supporting the government. Mogadishu independent security analyst Abdikarim Abdullah told VOA that the attack is a response to the local population's rejection of an Al-Shabaab peace proposal. He says the attack Friday was intended to make residents accept the proposal by banishing them collectively for the rejection. Al-Shabaab has been waging an insurgency in Somalia since 2007 and has been fighting both the Somali government and African Union peacekeepers in the country. Last month, Al-Shabaab staged a deadly hotel siege in the capital Mogadishu that lasted more than 30 hours and killed 21 people and wounded more than 100 others. Mohamed Daisane, for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
The first U.S. ambassador to Sudan in 25 years has vowed to support the country's transition to civilian rule. John Godfrey spoke while presenting his credentials Thursday to Sudan's military-led government. Mike Atit reports from the capital, Khartoum.
Ambassador John Godfrey presented his credentials to Sudan's military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan on Thursday in a ceremony at Sudan's presidential palace in Khartoum. Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, chairman of the Transitional Sovereign Council, welcomed the decision by the United States government to appoint an ambassador to Sudan after a 25-year absence. Al-Burhan stressed the importance of developing relations between Khartoum and Washington and says he hopes Godfrey's appointment will represent a new impetus for a better relationship between the two countries. Speaking to reporters shortly after the ceremony, Ambassador Godfrey said his arrival in Khartoum demonstrates the commitment of his government and its citizens to strengthen relations with the government and the people of Sudan.
I am so happy to be the new ambassador of the United States in Sudan after more than 25 years. I am happy to have this opportunity to work in Sudan and get to understand its people and their cultures more closely.
John Godfrey was named by the White House as the new ambassador to Sudan in early January. The U.S. Congress approved his appointment in July. Ties between the U.S. and Sudan were severely strained under the three-decade rule of ousted President Omar al-Bashir, who was indicted several years ago by the International Criminal Court in The Hague for war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur. Washington imposed tough economic sanctions on Khartoum. The U.S. government blacklisted Sudan in 1993 as a state sponsor of terrorism, as the Bashir administration hosted al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden for 5 years in 1990s. The ambassador's arrival comes as Sudan reels from deepening unrest and a spiraling economy since last year's military coup led by al-Burhan. Godfrey says the U.S. government hopes to see an inclusive civilian-led government restored in Sudan to complete the remaining transitional period.
We expect to see the establishment of a new government led by civilians in Sudan within a comprehensive dialogue that supports all Sudanese political parties, including the democratic supporting forces.
Salma An-Nur, who heads the media and information of the Forces for Freedom and Change, or FFC, a coalition of Sudanese political parties who played a key role in the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir, welcomes the appointment of Ambassador Godfrey. She says Godfrey's appointment is the fruit of hard work carried out by the transitional government led by former Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. An-Nur says the ambassador will no longer hear reports about Sudan, but will be an eyewitness to all what is going on in Sudan. She says the ambassador will come to know that Sudanese people are longing to achieve the objectives of December's revolution, reach a complete civilian-led government, and return to a democratic transformation. Before becoming U.S. ambassador to Sudan, Godfrey worked as the acting counterterrorism coordinator and acting special envoy to the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS. He formerly worked as the acting deputy chief of mission and a political consulate at the U.S. embassy in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and as the deputy secretary of state's chief of staff. Godfrey also worked for international organizations in Baghdad, Iraq, Tripoli, Libya, and Damascus in Syria. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
President Mongesi Masisi of Botswana has called for the removal of sanctions imposed by the West on ZANU-PF officials for alleged human rights violations and electoral fraud. Masisi made the call Thursday when he arrived in Zimbabwe for the official opening of this year's edition of the Zimbabwe Agricultural Show. VOA Zimbabwe Services' Ivan Zininga reports.
President Masisi told reporters at the Robert Gabriel Mugabe International Airport that the targeted sanctions are hurting Zimbabweans.
Viva Zimbabwe!
Viva!
Viva Botswana!
Viva!
Viva Botswana! President Mnangagwa and I have a wonderful relationship.
Yes.
You must know, you must see it,
yes.
You must feel it,
yes.
You must want it. Yes. Botswana continues to call for the removal of sanctions.
Yes.
Against Zimbabwe.
Masisi expressed the same sentiments when he officially opened the Zimbabwe Agricultural Show.
Let me once again thank you, Your Excellency, and my very dear bosom brother, for having invited me to this auspicious event. With these few remarks, I now declare officially the 2022 Zimbabwe Annual Agricultural Show officially open. I thank you for your attention.
Responding to Masisi's remarks, President Emmerson Mnangagwa also expressed happiness about the Botswana president's visit to Zimbabwe.
Viva Botswana! Viva Zimbabwe! Okay, President Masisi.
Yes.
Comment President, I'm saying to these people who are here, ZANPF members.
Yes.
And, from Harare. We just came, they heard you are coming because of the good relations between Botswana and Zimbabwe. You felt you must give our brother a resounding welcome.
In 2018, Botswana and Zimbabwe signed bilateral agreements to promote and explore cooperation in several fields such as education, agriculture, defense, security, energy, environment, and health. John Dipuwe, Botswana's presidential spokesperson, said Zimbabwe and Botswana have deep relations and therefore it's important for the two nations to strengthen their ties.
We have a very strong bilateral ties with Zimbabwe. Historically, the two countries and the peoples of the two countries have been interacting at different levels. For instance, we have signed a number of cooperation agreements with Zimbabwe in various fields like agriculture, health, defense and security, and many areas of human development. So the purpose of the technique is just to cement the
relations
between the two countries.
Professor Ricky Mukonza, a political science lecturer at Tswana University, says it is not surprising that President Masisi and President Mnangagwa have close relations as they both disliked their predecessors, former President Ian Khama and the late former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe.
We know that in the past, relations have not been so good between Zimbabwe and Botswana, especially during the time when former President Ian Khama was still at the helm. We know that there were a public space between him and the late former President of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe.
Masimba Mavaza, a Mnangagwa loyalist and ZANU-PF defender based in London in the United Kingdom, shares the same sentiments.
And if you realize, if you notice again, Zimbabwe exports a lot of agricultural products to Botswana. So Botswana is a market partner besides being a political partner to Zimbabwe. Our Zimbabwean relationship with Botswana was frosty during the times of President Ian Khama, but now it has become very bearable, a wonderful relationship, and a relationship which strengthens the economy of Zimbabwe, and the political geopolitical situation is actually promoted in the relationship between Zimbabwe and Botswana.
Fadzai Mahere, Opposition Citizens Coalition for Change caretaker spokesperson, says there is need for Zimbabwe to have good relations with other nations, including Botswana.
We've consistently stated that sanctions are not good for any nation. And as the government's in waiting, we as the CCC have a plan to end Zimbabwe's international isolation by building bridges with any progressive nation where it's mutually beneficial. It will be important to hear the concerns concerns of nations, we've imposed measures against us and ensure that we address them. We choose to have a conversation or dialogue as opposed to resorting to insults in the true spirit of re-engagement. And central to our objectives will obviously be the need to respect human rights, the rule of law, and eradicate corruption.
Masisi toured the Zimbabwe Agricultural Show accompanied by President Mnangagwa during his three-day state visit. The show was established in 1895 to promote agriculture and its supporting activities to facilitate agricultural development in Zimbabwe. On average, over 200,000 people attend the rebranded Zimbabwe Agricultural Show, formerly Harare Agricultural Show, annually. Reporting for VOA News, this is Evans Zeninga in Washington, D.C.
Drought-stricken parts of the Greater Horn of Africa are bracing for a fifth consecutive failed rain season, which will worsen the crisis which is impacting millions of people. The forecast for October to December issued at the recent Greater Horn of Africa Seasonal Climate Outlook Forum shows high chances of drier than average conditions across most parts of the region. In particular, the drought-affected areas of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia are expected to receive significantly below normal rainfall totals until the end of the year. For more on the drought situation in the region, I reached Abubakar Salih Babika, Technical Coordinator of Infrastructure at the World Meteorological Organization, a regional office for Africa in Addis Ababa.
The current drought in the Horn of Africa is really severe. We have four consecutive seasons that have failed. A fifth one is predicted also to fail, the upcoming season of October to December 2020. So this is the worst drought in the past 40 years and probably will be one of the longest drought in record.
You say this is the worst drought in almost 40 years. What do you attribute to this? Why this particular region?
Yes, the drought over this region is really linked to variability or changes, like cycle changes in the ocean, especially in the Pacific Ocean, the eastern part of the Pacific Ocean, the region which we call in the climate jargons, we call it the El Nino region. So this area where there is a cycle in the sea surface temperature, when it is colder than usual, it is called La Nina, and then it goes into a neutral mode where the temperature is just within the average, and then it goes into a warmer mode, then it's called El Nino. So El La Nina, when the temperature of the surface temperature in the eastern Pacific is colder than usual, it usually lead to drought in the Horn of Africa. And this pattern of El La Nina usually stays within a year or and two maximum, but the pattern this time persists since September 2020. We are almost in a La Nina situation, and that led to failure of consecutive season, the situation we are seeing now. Almost five consecutive seasons in failing with the rainfall below the normal, and especially when it fell during October to December, this is a major contributing season to the annual budget of rainfall. So that is why the situation is very severe.
This phenomenon covers a big region from Ethiopia to Somalia to parts of Kenya, Uganda, and this may lead to famine. So what should be done in the short term?
This region particularly in the Horn of Africa, it is affected because it's of high dependency on natural resources. The economies and the livelihood of the population is highly dependent on rainfed. For example, rainfed agriculture, pastoralism and livestock. So those are sectors that are really sensitive to rainfall variability and to drought. That is why the impact is severe. Add to that, the lack of preparedness, also government are a bit strained economically, and add to that the situation of COVID in the past few years, which affected the economies. So all those factors worsen the situation. What could be done is we echo the message from the IGAD executive secretary, who called for unregretful support from donors, from government, from humanitarian actors to adopt a no-regret strategy in going forward and helping the population in this crisis. Now almost 50 million people have been affected by the current drought. This is on the short-term support for the population. On long-term, there is need for a robust early warning system to be in place. In Africa, we still only about 40% of the population in Africa, roughly, and maybe below that, are covered by an early warning system. But there is need to expand the early warning system to cover all the population. And in this, we also echo the call from the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, that in the next 5 years, and he asked WMO to work on this, all people on Earth to be covered by early warning system. So that is the approach and the strategic solution to these challenges.
Kabaka Sali Babika is the technical coordinator of infrastructure at the World Meteorological Organization Regional Office for Africa in Addis Ababa. Meanwhile, some parts of the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have been hit hard by drought this year. Journalist Jafar Al-Katanti recently traveled from the city of Goma to the town of Kalemie on the shores of Lake Tanganyika. Along the way, he saw thousands of hectares of dried-up farmland. He spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about the situation.
All locals are afraid by this situation because there are people which depend by their farms. What they produce in their plantation is what they eat. So now there is 2 years, the dry season was longer than the rain season. So without rain, they don't produce. This condition makes them to don't get food. So according to the president of the civil society, many children are suffering from the malnutrition because of the lack of food.
Is there any aid coming to them? Are aid organizations there? Is the DRC government there?
There is no help from the Congolese government except some NGOs like Medecins Africains, which is the biggest one thing in the region. But the problem is also the security situation of that region. You know, it's a high-risk region for the foreigners as the militia are in a big activity in that zone where Banyamulenge people are fighting against local tribes. So it's not easy even for NGOs to operate in that zone.
That was Jafar Al-Katanti in the town of Kalemie in the eastern DRC. He was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. Relief Web, a humanitarian information service run by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, warns most of eastern Africa is stressed by drought. For the eastern DRC and Mozambique, Relief Web says internal conflict makes it hard for aid to reach families facing hunger. In the eastern DRC, more than 100 armed groups are battling for territory and resources. Nigeria presidential candidate of the Labour Party, Peter Obi, is on a tour of the United States ahead of the 2023 general election in the West African country. Nigerians will go to the polls on February 25th next year to choose a new leader. Obi, a former state governor, is up against the former vice president, Atiku Abubakar, from the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, and Nigeria's current vice president, Yemi Osinbajo, from the ruling All People's Congress, or APC. Obi's U.S. trip coincides with that of Vice President Osinbajo, who is also in Washington this week. VOA correspondent and host of Straight Talk Africa, Heidi Adams, caught up with Obi via Skype earlier. She asked him how he's countering the APC and the PDP, which are more established parties with veteran candidates.
We have moved from a once promising developing country to one now that is in a mess. We now have the highest number of people living in poverty in the world as a nation. We now have the highest out of school children in the world. We now have the highest infant mortality, even higher than India, that is 1.4 billion We now have the highest drug prevalence among youths. We have the highest unemployment. It is the two parties you mentioned that brought us here. So election 2023 will not be about tribe. It will not be about religion. It will not be about entitlement. It will not be about connection or any form of those primordial biases. It will be about the character Nigerians can trust. It will be about competence. See? It will be about capacity and commitment to start turning around the Nigerian situation.
Nigeria has long battled with corruption and impunity among its security agencies. This has hampered the country's ability to effectively crack down on insurgent groups like Boko Haram. Obi told VOA the best way to fight corruption among Nigeria's security agencies is to hold the country's top leadership to account and ensure transparency in the government.
When you lead transparently, others will follow. And corruption must now be dealt with in Nigeria. It isn't too long where we're preaching it, where we're talking about it, without dealing with it decisively.
That was Peter Obi from Nigeria's Labour Party speaking to VOA's Heidi Adams. African regional leaders, public and private partnerships, and hundreds of leaders in the private sector gathered for Africa Climate Week, which wrapped up on Friday. Scientists say Africa is one of the most vulnerable places in the world to the impact of climate change. Nisreen Al-Saim, a member of the United Nations Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group on Climate Change and chair of the Sudan Youth Organization on Climate Change, tells VOA's Caro Van Dam the aim of the gathering was to highlight the priorities of the region, prepare for upcoming meetings, and gather thoughts of a wider audience.
For example, the Regional Climate Week in Africa will have by far more activists, young people, civil society and governments than the COP will have, because the COP will have the whole world. So it will not be like as much focused, as much concrete and as much concentrated as the Regional Climate Weeks. It's also a very good opportunity for networking and also learning about other processes happening, launching different new projects. And it's, for young people, at least a good way for capacity building, especially if you are preparing a delegation for any of the multilateral processes. Yet the regional weeks are not a decision-making place, so no new decisions are being made there. And it's most likely to exchange experiences.
You as a young person and the advisory group that is a group of youth like yourself for the United Nations Secretary General on Climate Change, what do you hope to see? There's so many different areas of, you know, they're trying to tackle, but what do the young people really want to see out of this?
The young people want to see is always clear, less talking, more actions, more finance, more empowerment for young people in different fields. And what we want is not really still happening. Yes, a lot of windows of dialogues and intergenerational exchange is happening in these weeks. Yet the more action, less talking thing is still not there. And the support for young people is normally very much limited. And we still don't feel that we have meaningful inclusion. We are included, and this is a very good step comparing to the situation and how it was. Yet how meaningful the inclusion that we have right now is the question that we are always raising.
Scientists have long noted that African countries have contributed the least to greenhouse gas emission, yet climate change threatens to expose up to 118 million of the poorest Africans to droughts, floods, other problems, extreme heat. What kinds of partnerships do you think can be forged to deal specifically with floods and droughts?
Well, unfortunately, as I am speaking to you, Sudan is being under a huge, devastating flood. Until now, more than 100,000 lost their houses and livelihood. Losses are in millions. And I got a record yesterday from the representative of WFP in Sudan, World Food Program, saying that the harvest was very poor and the flood actually drought the rest of the food that was ongoing. So this year we might have 18 million Sudanese in famine, which is one third of our population. And this is alarming. I don't know how to describe it short for you, but if someone asks me about the situation of my country, specifically what kind of partnerships need to be done, then of course, proper infrastructure, clean energy partnerships, at least the contribution to the education of the people and raising their awareness of the problem. Everyone needs to understand what is the problem in order to find a solution for it.
That was Nisreen Al-Saim, who sits on the UN Secretary General's Youth Advocacy Group on Climate Change and chair the Sudan Youth Organization on Climate Change. She was speaking to my colleague, Cara Van Dam from Paris. The managing director of Nigeria's National Petroleum Corporation, or NNPC, sparked controversy this week when he said thieves from all levels of society are stealing 200,000 barrels of crude oil per day. Meli Kyarim even accused churches and mosques of keeping stolen fuel, an allegation rejected by religious groups. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Meli Kyari addressed a weekly ministerial briefing in the presidential village on Tuesday and said up to 95% of Nigeria's oil produced at the Bonny terminal is being stolen. The NNPC Limited Group managing director cited one oil pipeline in the area and said 295 illegal connections were attached along its 200-kilometer course. Kyari said the oil theft is mostly done by organized groups who sometimes work with residents of local communities. He also said religious leaders, churches and mosques are involved in crude oil theft. Kyari said authorities are attempting to address the problem, but adds the theft is difficult to stop.
We have some visibility around nearly everything we are, particularly on the security platforms. Currently, there are 122 arrests, and they will be prosecuted. About 11 vessels, 30 speedboats have been arrested, 179 wooden boats, and then 37 trucks.
Kyari's comments on mosques and churches taking part in the theft sparked a backlash among religious groups. Spokesperson of the Catholic Society of Nigeria, Michael Umo, says the oil company head must be specific in his opinion.
Even this that they are talking about religious leaders being part of it, if there is any atom of truth, will not be possible if government were responsible and doing its work. They are just trying to bring in all those distractions, but I will not want to begin to disagree with him until he really explains what he means, because many people go by the name religious leaders, but with very terrible character.
Kyari said security operatives have recovered nearly 36 million liters of crude oil and about 22 million liters of diesel. He also said they recovered some gasoline and kerosene. Kyari emphasized that apart from revenue losses, oil bunkering activities and pipeline vandalism were causing irredeemable environmental damage. But critics like Umar are pointing a finger back at authorities, saying they have been reckless in the handling of oil assets, limiting national profit. Faith Nwadishi, the executive director of the Center for Transparency Advocacy, says the government is only trading blame.
The question for me to ask is, can you park a ship in a mosque or in a church? The volumes that we are talking about are between 85% and 90% of crude. I understand the fact that now Nigerians are talking about crude oil depletion of revenue, and that's why they're saying the easy way out is to say that other stakeholders are the ones that are stealing the crude.
In August, Nigerian oil officials launched an online portal to track oil theft and promised to reward whistleblowers. In a controversial move, they also awarded a pipeline surveillance contract to a former militant who used to steal oil. The governor of Delta State, one of Nigeria's oil-rich southern states, praised the awarded contract, saying it shows the government took his advice to involve oil-producing communities in pipeline surveillance. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America, and I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. An online video dictionary for the deaf and hearing people who want to learn sign language has been launched in South Africa. It's the first of its kind in the country, launched as Deaf Awareness Month kicked off. Vika Stark reports from Cape Town.
The South African Sign Language Dictionary is available online and as an app. It's a project of the Pan-South African Language Board, or PANSALB, and the National Institute for the Deaf. The executive head of languages at the PANSALB, Julius Dantile, says it's hoped this will make sign language more popular.
Parents of deaf children, they come to us and say, I have a problem. I cannot communicate with my kid. I cannot communicate with my own kid because I am a hearing person. My kid is deaf, goes to school, I don't understand the language. It becomes painful and you see it in the face.
Dantile says it's taken 7 years to develop the video dictionary, which is in English and sign language. And he says the work isn't done yet and is appealing for people with the necessary skills to help improve it.
On the financial resources, it requires also human resources. And to those who've got those particular skills or are interested to be part of this revolution and game changer in society, to come forward to say, I raise my hand.
Chairperson of the board of PANSAL, Professor Lali Makubu Badenost, says the online dictionary has more than 3,000 signs and 2,500 English words. She says they are hoping the dictionary will help with standardizing sign language in the country.
Here within the country, we also have dialects, you know, so the people that are coming from the south and the north and so on. But then as PANSAL, we are advocating for the standardized version.
Makubu Badenost says sign language also differs from country to country.
The South African Sign Language is based on the American Sign Language, ASL. There would be slight differences because the British Sign Language and the Australian Sign Language, mainly they use two hands to sign. And the South African Sign Language, we use mainly one hand to sign. So, but a person who is deaf, when we have international conferences, they are able to see some similarity. They wouldn't be completely lost.
Speaking through interpreter Beryl Buerta, PANSAL board member Klinga Kabu urged the Minister of Arts and Culture, Nathi Mtetwa, who was present, to make sign language the 12th official language. Kabu said this would bring many benefits to the country, including in education. Currently, only 47 schools offer it as a medium of instruction.
So open up your hearts. It's our human right. Viva deaf community. Viva!
This is Vicky Stark for VOA, Cape Town, South Africa.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. And here we go. Enjoy.
Somebody love.
majaliwa ila wengi walinyimwa tabia na shefu kabarikiwa mwanamme hisia pesa ni majaliwa ila wengi walinyimwa hisia na pesa kabarikiwa na kuona Brazil hapo Rio de Janeiro ukiongeze wanywele senje nano mabizinez and I see you in China with the latest designer shaking what your doctor gave ya on your worst behavior Susanna Bandeja. Siku kucha minadua Aisenja kilini moyo ni bado we wanizuzua When are you coming home senje Tell me are you on your way Kife tukipenda na Kiromeo na Julia Aisenja nakosa usingizi Siku kucha minadua Aisenja kilini moyo ni bado we wanizuzua When are you coming home senje Tell me, are you on your way? Tupe tukipendana, Kiromeo na Julia. I send a bande,
send a hello, hello, hello,
hello, hello.
If you got to hear this song,
Sanje, come
somebody
on.
Loves you.
Oh,
send a hello, hello, hello. Change your mind and come back home. Somebody loves you.
About that, it's time for me to enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
Chilling with my girls and my homeboys.
And your homeboy pull up in the Rolls Royce, 12 hours, but I'm cross up all, so there's no choice. And my airport business get the house moist. I just landed from Dubai with the false choice. And I might pitch shorty from the chill joint. Make sure bass for my crib, love my low voice.
Next week, we go line in Benin. We go drive going spots with no plan to be seen. If I don't date G, I go have some Peking. Cause I drink, make nice, we ain't have to be mean. God damn it.
With us, cause when we come back and you see us so happy, you will never know why the fuss. We are going on an African holiday, you will want to come with us. Cause when we come back and you see us so happy, you will never know why the fuss.
Before I break down, I won't hike for Cape Town, then try to figure out what the hell be Afrikaans. I make plans to climb Table Mountain for lap dance, but to go SA without visa, I Afrikaans. Charlie, flying within the continent is also dear. Resorts are all full of expats, so we don't go there, so where?
Yes, of course, I just want chill.
That's right.
But course, I just want drill.
Catch flights.
My
appetite.
Hold your truck in case I'm ill.
Also, Abidjan, I be fun. Man rice, my I never go Cote d'Ivoire. Tu sais pas, my monk, on dit quoi? Another place, take African bodies day. Africa on this sweet African holiday.
Oui. Yeah.
Let me go on some holiday. Pack your bags, go today. Where's your time to play? African holiday. Let me go on some holiday.
40. Give me loving, no go to mute. You see your body carry something I never understand. I must confess, your body very offensive. It is scatter my defense, defense, yo. I must confess, your body not my objective. It is giving me problems, problems, yeah. My darling, would you fly with me international? You go there with me for flight. Honey, would you stay with me as I know normal? You go there with me for life. Because if you live, oh yeah, she did do me magic. Tell your body, na he kill it. My head is slow like traffic. This your body, oh, it is high like palm, yo. Oh my lady, oh, look at me, con yo. If na face you be Rihanna and your body na palapa, wala, I want to with you, Asa. I must confess, your body very offensive. This got my defense, defense, yo. I must confess, your body not my object, yo. They giving me problems, problems, yeah. My darling, would you fly with me international? You go there with me for flight. Honey, would you stay with me as I know normal? You go there with me for life.
From the bottom, I just stack my pants. Never going broke, that's common sense. We've broke, bring your ratchet friend. Rolling with smoke, just in case of nonsense. In this life, they rather see me down, oh. That's why I wake up, thank God, oh. Look around, many rivals. After one man's flesh for survival.
Who's that plus 2, 3, 4? That's my nines, babe. Never seen before, how you my mate? I can't even trust myself in this climate. Animal instincts, no primate. Crying through Houston, do what I'm used to. Packs flying like a rocket from Houston. I can't love you the way that I used to. You know what, I better go get a new you. Shake it, baby, don't break it. You know that I let my girl pit it. To make an entrance, we come late to the party. Shake, shake, shake it, baby, don't break it. You know that I let my girl pit it. To make an entrance, we come late to the party.
If it ain't money, then why you in my mansion? No, I don't want no names in my section. What I'm in ain't a rental. That's why she had her eyes on me when she entered. Having breaky for dinner, how could I give you advice? You can probably save me once, but you can't do it twice. Yeah, I made it and I said I always go like Mike. Yeah, I made it and I said I always go like
I put the fashion in, fashion will be late. Been putting work and nothing ain't changed. Power in me for my ancestry. Come and seeing things I could never have seen. Don't just do this for hello me. Do it for the squad, family. Don't pretend you're a friend with me. Vibes tell me you're an enemy.
Shake it, baby, don't break it. You know that I let my girl beat it. To make an entrance, we come late to the party. Shake, shake, shake it, baby, don't break it. You know that I let my girl beat it. To make an entrance, we come late to the party.
I'm so highly blessed. Me go broke, I highly doubt it. You go back, but you can't even shake it.
They got gun, but they can't even shoot it. This one no be SI, this one a bling bling. She dey feel me the way I dey sing sing. Show me real love, don't show me fake thing. For this side, life no be joke thing. Shake it, baby, don't break it. You know that I like my girl fit it. To make an entrance, we come late to the party. Shake, shake, shake it, baby, don't break it. You know that I like my girl fit it. To make an entrance, we come late to the party.
From the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Natalie in Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Netherlands team, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. I'm your host, Douglas Impogo, in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.